Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Life as a 13-year-old can be pretty scary. Now add in a giant evil rat, a zombie horde, and Godzilla-sized monsters. That is just what our next guest, author Max Brallier, does in his book series, The Last Kids on Earth. The books are being turned into an animated series on Netflix. The first episode, a one-hour special, premiered yesterday. The fifth book in the series, The Last Kids on Earth and the Midnight Blade, was also released yesterday. We spoke with Max, who grew up in Reading, Massachusetts, and sets his series in a town called Wakefield. And I wanted to know, is this story about a group of 13-year-olds battling zombies and monsters, just trying to survive, is this a metaphor for the epic struggles and chaos that are the middle school experience?
I don't think that I intended necessarily to be that, but I did intend for the things that the main character Jack Sullivan goes through in this sort of end of the world scenario to be like a larger, gigantic monster version of the sort of trauma and just miserableness that kids experience in middle school.
That totally resonates. It also feels like the story at its core really is about the friendship among these kids. They really have each other's backs. Here's a clip from the series.
We can't stay here. He'll tear this place apart.
No, we're gonna stay and defend it. My whole life, I've never had a home worth fighting for or friends to share it with. Now I do. And I'm not giving it up without a fight. I'm not gonna...
Less speeches, more fighting!
That's awesome. Was the power of this friendship really your focus in the storytelling?
Yes. I knew when I first started writing it, I was like, I'm going to write something about monsters and there's going to be zombies and there's going to be lots of action. And I'm going to have a big like James Bond sort of vehicle that the main characters drive around in, even though they're only in sixth grade. And that'll just be cool and cool and cool and cool and cool. And then when I started writing it, I was like, oh, right. Like the heart is what makes me enjoy all the stuff that I like. There's like a heart to it and there's a friendship and there's like a sort of family element. And so that very much became like the center of it. And now the action kind of turns around that and turns on that, the relationships and the friendships and the like, the buddy-buddy camaraderie. I was very much influenced by like the Goonies and things like that that I loved growing up and still love today.
I didn't think of the Goonies, but it really, there is kind of a channel to that. How did you tap back into your own younger voice? Because the voice, the Jack's voice, the other kids' voices are so authentic. How did you tap back into that?
Frighteningly, it was very easy and didn't take much. I think that it's just my voice, and that's like scary to think about. I'm raising a kid right now. That's really frightening. But in terms of the way Jack talks and the sort of the things that he thinks about, and he wants to have at least five different crossbows on his treehouse and also a bunch of catapults and also a big screen TV with a video game center, that's just like what I want if I could build my apartment from the ground up.
Well, who wouldn't? Good point.
Yeah, right? Like, so I think I just sort of, it's easy for me to tap into that. The only times it ever gets tough is when I try to make, like, even for, like, pop culture stuff, I still stick to things that I know and love, like the Goonies and Indiana Jones and Star Wars. A few times I'll flirt around with things like Fortnite or stuff that I'm not that familiar with. And that's when I have to rely on, like, asking students questions during school visits.
So your book is kind of a hybrid. Can you talk a little bit about the very specific style?
Yeah. So I never know what to call it. I don't think anybody does. Anybody in publishing?
I clearly
anybody
didn't.
In books? Nope. Nobody does. Don't worry. It's not just you. It's like a hybrid. Some people call it an illustrated novel. But yeah, it's like a mixture of text and illustration. And it's nice for me because it lets me write the stuff that I want to write. And then when something seems intimidating to write, I just go, illustration here. And then I let Douglas Holgate, the brilliant illustrator, do all the heavy lifting.
Well, that would make it easy to work through.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the series has been turned into this animated show on Netflix. It's got this bright, colorful look. It's not really what you think of or expect when you're thinking about a post-apocalyptic, zombie-filled world. But I read an interview with your co-showrunner, Scott Peterson. He actually used the term funpocalypse. How important was it to capture both the fun and the post-apocalyptic all in one vibe?
First of all, I'm the one that coined funpocalypse.
Okay,
Scott,
we'll give you
it.
Formal
no,
credit.
No, just kidding. So it was early on, like one of the important things that just even when I was doing and the books are black and white, but like the idea was that it would still look like happy and fun. And There's a sort of sense of weird wish fulfillment in this series where, yes, the world has ended, but this is about kids who can now do whatever they wanted to do. When I was creating this series and thinking about what it would be, I had trouble like finding a way to sort of create that kind of classic Goonies thing because of cell phones and the constant connection between parents and kids and the whole world just being so connected. So I was like, maybe I just need to wipe out the whole world. And then just give, you know, the kids can have their own, like their whole hometown is their playground. And they race go-karts through the streets and they have battles with giant monsters at CVS. And the sky is still bright and blue and it's the grass is growing and it smells nice. And so it's not this really dark gray broken concrete all the time world. It's like a, yeah, the world has ended and there are zombies and these big brightly colored monsters, but it's still very fun.
You know, I'm glad to hear about the blue sky and, you know, there's still some fresh grass, et cetera, because the book takes place in a town named Wakefield. You're in from Reading.
Yes.
I kind of took that as a tip of the hat, and I don't really like to think of Wakefield in a post-apocalyptic gray mist. So first, was that a tip to the real Wakefield?
It was. I wanted to do a tip to the real Reading, but that word looks like reading, and it's confusing. I remember I moved there in third grade, and they had all those signs in our classrooms about like how wonderful reading is and like how reading is the best thing for a child, and reading is fundamental, and reading is important. And I thought it was talking about Reading, and I went home to my parents, and I was like, this town you took us to is really weird. I think there's like a cult. So I went with Wakefield, which just seemed like a more digestible, easy to understand, like, oh, it's a town called Wakefield. But yeah, and a lot of the locations in the books are taken from my childhood.
So have you heard from Wakefield? Do you like have a key to the city now or anything like that? Or are they mad at you for blowing it up and putting in zombies and monsters instead?
Neither. I don't think I've heard a darn thing. I've heard from Reading, and I got to do some school visits at my old elementary school, my old middle school, which was really, really just amazing. That was like a very cool moment to like walk back and go to my old locker and be like, wow, a lot of the action is set like in my old middle school. And so it's just really crazy. But Wakefield, I haven't heard from you guys.
All right, Wakefield, wake up.
Step up.
There you go. So listen, there are a lot of Star Wars references in the book. And I understand that Mark Hamill, who is, of course, Luke Skywalker, is doing some voice work for the show. So at the risk of sounding a little simple, how cool is that?
It's still like I can't really believe that that happened. I got to go into the studio and at one point I very obnoxiously like was like, actually, you should read the line like this and kind of like you're emphasizing the wrong word, Luke. No, but I really did have this kind of like it's very strange and amazing and too weird and too cool for me to get over. I mean, I think after we found out that he had accepted one of the roles, I was like weird about it for like a month, and I woke my wife up in the middle of the night and I was like, is this real or is this like an alternate weird timeline? Because it was just so bizarre that like this was happening, and it was so like I wrote all these Star Wars references in the books 4 years before there was a TV show because I wouldn't be a writer or wouldn't be telling stories or anything if it wasn't for Star Wars.
Amazing. All right. So there are a lot of monsters, especially zombies in the book, and zombies have been having a moment for a while now. So why do you think we have such a fascination with that particular type of monster?
It's like the longest moment in the history of moments. They've been having a moment now. Like I wanted to write zombie stories back in like the early 2000s. And I was like, oh, I think I missed my moment. And now it's like 15 years later. And I was like, this moment is great. I think there's just something to people that you know, the idea that they could become this sort of monstrous, horrible thing with skin falling off and nails all long and gnarled and gross. And I like writing about them because I've written a few adult things where the zombies are the very scary, creepy, monstrous villains. But here in Last Kids, I was able to use the zombies partly for spooks and for scares, but they end up sort of being more of an annoyance. And then it's these big, almost Godzilla-sized monsters that are the actual very scary bad guys.
So the show has, you've got this launch of the first special on Netflix where the series follows. What's your favorite moment or scene, and what do you want people to take away from it when they watch it?
Favorite scenes? it's the stuff that was directly translated from the book. Like, there's this enemy they meet called the zombie ball, which is a bunch of zombies that somehow became kind of entangled together, like those the urban legends about the rat kings, where their tails would get all like connected and rats would become like one big giant rat.
Ew.
I remember that from 30 Rock. But they talked about that in there.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so I had been writing the zombie ball scene like 6 years ago or something. And I was like, this is really cool. And then Doug drew it. And I was like, this is really cool. And then when I got to see it animated, like rolling down a hallway of a middle school, chasing these kids in like this sort of Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark opening style scene, I was like, wow, it really came to life.
Amazing. There's your imagination on the screen for other people.
Yeah,
to...
like it's there. It's like there. And it's there because there was like 150 really talented people sitting at computers for like a year creating it. And that's also like a wow, like that's just amazing. All the support and faith placed in one idea is a little scary, but amazing. And then I want people to take away, honestly, just a really like a sense of that was 66 minutes of fun, of adventure. It was happy. It was exciting. I like the characters. It should just feel good. Like, I think even though it's like an end of the world story, the key to it is that there's a heart to it and that it's like the sort of adventure that we don't get to sort of see that much anymore. It's just kids on their own getting into trouble and like saving the day in a really fun, gigantic way.
That's Max Brallier, New York Times bestselling author of more than 30 books, including The Last Kids on Earth series. The series has been adapted into an animated Netflix show, which premiered yesterday. And the fifth book in the series, The Last Kids on Earth and the Midnight Blade, was also released yesterday. That's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Wuthman. Tim Skoog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi, and I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.